When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
This episode of the Need to Fail is brought to you by spring water. It's definitely toilet water that they put into bottles, and I still drink it.
Sometimes you need to fail.
The need.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Need to Fail. My name is Don Finelli. I run this thing for only two more episodes, down to our final two episodes here. I'd love to start this one off with a call that gutted me, I have to tell you. I thought all the fail calls were done, but they weren't. And I was happy to get another one, and it was a real powerful one, and one I think a lot of us can relate to. So here's John from Texas.
Hey, Don, this is John Spriggs. I am from Dallas, Texas. It's been a year, and a lot of stuff ended this year for me. A comedy theater that I got connected to about 5 years ago and started doing improv and kind of found myself and found a group of people. And that's actually how I found your show. It was through that community. That theater seems to be shutting down. I think improv is going away. All of this, you know, wonderful stuff that I had built up over the last 5 years is going away. I had a 3-year relationship in the middle of quarantine, and I don't know, you know, and I'm working my family business that I came back to help them out 7 years ago. It feels like it's starting to slowly fall apart in the middle of this economic decline. And then your podcast is going away, a source of joy for many years. That's really brought me a lot of encouragement. So I don't know, man. I just wanted to say thanks. And I don't know what the next step is, but one thing that's brought me a lot of comfort is hearing these stories and hearing how other people have made it through difficult times. And so I want to thank you so much for all that you've done. And that's it. So long, man. I appreciate you.
Man, thank you, John. That means a lot. I'm sorry that you're going through this, I guess, perpetual loss, this compounding loss. It feels like, you know, this feeling of loss is so omnipresent nowadays. And, you know, whether we're losing loved ones or relationships or businesses, you know, especially, you know, our institutions, these institutions that might have, you know, brought folks together to help create a community. You know, a lot of improv theaters and indie venues and art institutions are closing down or downsizing. And I know creative community is not just one building, but sometimes that building is a symbol and a cornerstone that unites the community. And I think it is quite appropriate to grieve that loss, especially if it's a location where, you know, joyful memories took place, or where stories were developed, and where you had the privilege to kind of experience the range of life and existence and all that good stuff, emotions, hardships. I think for a lot of people, it might have been one of the first places they felt accepted or felt like a home. So it's very sad, very, very, very sad. And yeah, as for relationships and businesses, all I can say is you're definitely not alone in that regard. Keep trying to connect with people. I think that's what we need to keep doing during this time. Obviously, it doesn't need to be physical, but, you know, we are a social species. And we need to take care of each other now more than ever. And you're not a burden, right? Like, I always feel like a burden. I'm speaking to myself right now. So reach out to people, connect, share your dreams and fears, lean on your meaningful relationships, or be bold and create new ones. It takes a lot of vulnerability, but it's worth a try. So thanks again for the call, John. I wish you nothing but happiness. I'm sorry I'm ending a source of solace for you, but these episodes will be here for you, hopefully for a long time. I don't fucking know. But keep chugging, man. You got this. We got this. Much love, brother. So I had this beautiful mind moment in the shower before. And I was thinking, so last week I talked about hey, I'm going to tell you guys over these next couple episodes what I've learned about failure. Okay. To really wrap this thing up. So last week I talked about how, time and perspective are your friend to even determine if something can be classified as a failure. With enough distance and perspective, you might be surprised to see where your perceived failure has led you in the long run. So I was great, I'm going to build off of that. So I was thinking about it in the shower, I was lathering up my bits and pieces, and then I just started going down this rabbit hole. I was what words are associated with failure? What words have failure in them? I was heart failure. I was okay, heart failure. Yeah, well, that's the circulatory system. You know what the circulatory system is? A closed system. Maybe only failures can take place in closed systems. Or no, finite systems or closed loop systems. Jesus Christ. Guys, I got a D in thermodynamics, okay? So you see where this has led me. Now, I am not going to go down this road. I started writing down notes this could be the thing, and maybe a closed loop system or isolated system. It doesn't fucking matter. I think what I was thinking of, many of my guests that I've talked to don't really use the word failure. And I even started using the word setbacks because of that, because they associate failure with something ending. Okay. So that's what I was thinking of. I think I was thinking of a closed system. You go to an audition, you either get it or you don't. If your whole career rests on that one audition, sure, it could be seen as a failure. Or if you don't get that audition, yeah, that could be a failure. But I see that as a closed system. Okay. I think what people in this business do well are, one, they don't really have a backup plan, and they just see this career as this kind of ongoing thing. So if they do experience a failure, say, didn't get onto SNL or something like that, it is more of a setback than an ending to their whole career. I think when their career ends and they didn't achieve what they wanted to, maybe that can be seen as a failure, but maybe that could be seen as an achievement as well. So I don't fucking know. I was going to go into this big thing, this big theory on closed loop systems. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't matter. I think it comes down to viewing your career as this kind of ongoing thing, and maybe those bumps along the way will just feel like bumps and not complete failures. But I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. I did all these interviews and I don't know what I'm talking about. Let's get to the show. Got my good friend on today. She was the first interview I ever did for this podcast. It's the amazing Lauren Lapkus. Lauren and my wife, Laura, met in New York many years ago at the UCB Theater, and then they became close friends and performed a bunch together. She was in our wedding. She's one of the funniest people alive, I think. One of my favorite people to improvise with. She's generous as hell. She's always opened her door for Laura and I when we visited L.A., she tried to help take out my podcast at one point, The Need to Fail at one point. She's always ready to lend a helping hand, so it's much appreciated. And when we did this interview 7 years ago, she was sleeping on my couch in Brooklyn Heights and filming the first season of Orange is the New Black. That wasn't out yet. She hadn't really done any podcasts yet. I think she was doing Hot in Cleveland, a sitcom with Betty White at the time, maybe as well. She was off her first sitcom, Are You There, God? It's Me, Chelsea. But that's about it. I mean, to list her credits now would take truly longer than me explaining my closed loop failure theory clusterfuck I just wasted your time on before. But if you're a fan of Lauren's, she's got a ton of podcasts. Most recently, Newcomers with Nicole Byer. She's got her own Lap Time. You can find those and a lot more on her Patreon. She was just in Netflix's number one movie in the universe, The Wrong Missy. As I say in the podcast, I texted Lauren shortly into watching it. She's on fucking fire throughout that whole movie. She's always on her A game, I think, but this is her on her A plus game. And she talks about why in the podcast when I ask her about it. What else? I mean, she's in the supergroup Wild Horses. She starred in indie movies like The Unicorn. She's been in blockbusters like Jurassic World, TV shows like Crashing and The Big Bang Theory. Ever heard of it? Voiceovers galore. But we chat about how she doesn't book like 90% of the things she goes out for and cover a whole lot of other stuff. But I wanted to start where we spent a good amount of time in our first interview, and that is on the subject of, yeah, vision boards, baby. This intro is way too long. Let's get to it. That's what you're here for. Here she is, Lauren Lapkus. Yeah, I wanted to know your current relationship with vision boards. So you're still doing all that stuff?
I still do. So, like, I've on and off, I've done them over the years, but I always have one, and I usually, it kind of depends whether I keep it out or whether I put it in the closet and just kind of, like, know it's there. Uh-huh. But it's usually depends on, like, the level of embarrassment I feel about whatever it says. So, like, sometimes there'll be one, like, living in our bedroom, and like that's just on display.
Uh-huh.
But I was just cleaning out my closet during the pandemic, and I found my vision board, and it says 2020 in huge letters and or numbers. And I was like, I should throw this in the trash. Of course, I was like, there's gonna be, this is embarrassing that I even made this. And then a bunch of it had come true.
Whoa, really?
So I was
420,
like,
yes. You made one for 2020, and yeah, you're like, let me throw this out because this year's a shit show.
Yes. And then I actually was, I had put on there like Beyond Seth Meyers, which I got to do during the pandemic. Like there were a couple things that I don't want to list that happened, but like, right. It was just kind of interesting. No, that's okay. Because I looked at it, but at a glance, I was like, I'm an idiot for thinking anything good could be happening. And then I was like, wait, some good stuff did happen. I need to like recognize that.
Yes.
It's so easy to just go like, everything sucks. But
yeah, because we're bombarded with news all day that everything does suck. And I think at a certain point, a lot of things did suck and they just weren't in. It's almost like since this new presidency in the last 4 years, just a lot of the muck has come up, but it was kind of always there. It's just getting exacerbated. And now it's like a daily thing where you feel like you're getting gaslighted, right? You feel just crazy.
Yes.
So then you just write things off. You go like, you know what? This year's a wash.
But
that's too broad.
And I feel like a lot of people are saying that. And so it's kind of the thing too of like sort of Twitter makes me think everything sucks even more than I already think that. Like, of course, I think everything sucks on like the basic obvious level. But I also have to live my day-to-day life and I can't just be like completely depressed because of the state of the world all the time. But it's so easy to feel that way when you just are reading about bullshit all day and people just like posting memes of like throwing 2020 in the trash,
yeah,
like whatever. Like, it's just like, I can easily drop into that mindset, but I feel much better when I don't. So like the vision board thing was kind of an interesting example of that for me, where I thought I really need to pull back and see like the positives.
Mm-hmm.
More often.
Yeah. So you're doing them every year. You still do them. Is it like a ritual that you do?
Yeah, so it kind of became a ritual with my friend Arden Marine. Mm-hmm. We did it for the last couple years. We've done them together with another friend. And that's been fun, but it's kind of an interesting thing to do with other people because it's so personal.
Yeah, that's hard. Like, that would be hard for me.
I don't really want to like tell them everything on it. So it's kind of
you
like,
lose some space.
Don't look at my work. Yeah. Put up like folders like you would do in school to like protect your test. And then before that, I pretty much have done one almost every year. I think I stopped holding on to most of them, but I'll take a picture of them. Mm-hmm. And so I can kind of look back. But I do feel that it's important. So it's interesting that we talked about that back then.
Yeah.
I definitely have found that like whenever I put down specific things that I want in my life, a lot of them happen because I think there's a logical explanation that when you know what you want, you go after it more, you talk about it more freely. Mm-hmm. If someone brings up something connected to that, you jump at the opportunity. Like it just kind of makes you realize what's important to you. So
yeah,
I think it's That's how I've explained it to my very logical uncle, mm-hmm. who would think it was weird that I was doing that.
Yeah, sure. Because there is the kind of cosmic, universal law of attraction stuff that is brought up with it. And that might be a little bit eye-rolly for a lot of people. Yeah. Which, fair enough. But then there is the, okay, well, maybe there's a scientific explanation or just a practical explanation of you're more focused on what you want. Therefore, the steps to get there are a little clearer for you. Like,
yeah.
The whole CAPES coaching method is breaking down, you know, small goals to get to your big goal and practical steps that you can actually see yourself doing, which is very like, yep, that's how you get there. And then sometimes like, there's all these things that happen in your way and you realize maybe that wasn't my goal. I mean, you even talked about it last time. Sometimes you want something so much and then you start getting towards it and you go like, that's not actually what I want.
Yes. And I think that happens more often than I realize. Mm-hmm. I just had it happen kind of recently that I was going to be doing this project and I had been talking to people about it for a couple years. And everything takes forever. So like, you know, when you're trying to like get something made, it can take so long. And I was kind of talking and working with this production company and with an old friend on this project. And I was really into it. And then recently I realized that it's not really in line with my goals anymore. But it was like, so I had to back out of it, which was really hard. Mm-hmm. But it was an important moment where I thought like, oh, I don't need to just continue doing this because I said I want to or something. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I completely understand what you mean. That's just a very hard decision because you're almost, it's like almost like your own manager in a certain respects where you're like, but this doesn't exactly line up for the plan that I had. And we know plans can change, but if there's something that, you know, if there's something that kind of, I don't know. Yes. I understand what you're saying. With that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the idea of doing it really came out of wanting to just follow my heart and not wait for things to happen for me. Mm-hmm. Like it was like kind of coming from a place of being really proactive and just saying like, I think this is really cool. I want to do this.
Right.
And then as other things happened for me, I thought like it was almost this realization of like, oh, I actually can go back to an older goal that I have.
Yes,
and I don't be like, and I'm re-interested in this. There's opportunities back with this old goal.
Yep.
And if I do this thing, it kind of like throws off that trajectory. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, but it's so hard to make decisions like that. Like, I mean, I think that's one of the hard parts about being an actor, creator, person is that you like have to make all these decisions for yourself and like you're bound to have failures, I mean, no matter what, but like,
yeah,
it feels worse when you're like, I made all these choices and this is the failure.
Yeah, this is all on my shoulders.
Yeah. Well,
my kind of macro dilemma at times is when to pivot and when to double down on something. So,
yeah.
Oh, I didn't maybe say you're pitching a show and that you're getting a couple of no's. Do you double down and try to rework it and retool it and figure out exactly what's going on? Or do you pivot away from that and go like, you know what, this just doesn't seem sellable right now? And I think that's like the ultimate thing that, and then that goes further because sometimes like your gut you trust because it's brought you to where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And then certain things where it's like, well, my gut brought me to this place and that's, feels wrong now. It feels
but
like this is the
what
wrong
I
way.
I feel like so often mm-hmm. with my gut mm-hmm. is like when I'm like, I could call it trusting my gut, but I think a lot of times I ignore my gut. Mm-hmm. Like I think I'm trusting mm-hmm. my gut, but there's a part of me that's going, I'm not really admitting that mm-hmm. I don't think this is a good idea.
Yep, do the same thing.
I'm just, I don't want to be the one to say it or mm-hmm. like whatever the reason is.
Scared.
Like I, or yeah, mm-hmm. it's fear and it's like, and I don't want to burst someone else's bubble. Mm-hmm. Like there's just like, you know, different things that stop you from being completely honest about that feeling.
Right.
And that's so often for me, what leads me to these dead ends where I go, I kind of knew I didn't want, or I kind of knew this wouldn't be good. Or I feel we've pushed this past its limit. Like mm-hmm. I knew where the limit was with this.
Yes.
And now we've gone too far. We're yeah. like, try to fit a square peg or something. Yeah. Like
even when your gut leads you to these good things, it's still hard to follow it 100% of the time because of what you're saying. There's all these things. Maybe you're too nice. Maybe you're too whatever. You feel bad.
And I think with this project that I just backed out of, there was the feeling of like, I'm trusting my gut because this, partly because this opportunity is being presented to me that I wouldn't have, that like, I feel lucky to get.
Mm-hmm.
So like, wow, someone thought I should do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
That is flattering. And so that also plays a role where you're like, who am I to say no to this opportunity?
Right, right.
Which I still, I feel like all the time struggle with, like, because I think when I first started, I basically never said no. Mm-hmm. There were so few things I said no to. Mm-hmm. I can't think of any. I'm sure they were just like an improv show, you know, and I probably didn't say no. So like, I just did everything, which I often think is a great thing. Like when people are starting out and you're trying to get your career going, saying yes to all different types of opportunities is so helpful because you meet people, you have experience. When a bigger thing happens, you're more prepared, you're less nervous. But then as you get more established, the habit of saying no is not ingrained. Mm-hmm. So like, it's really hard for me to decide sometimes when I need to just say no, even to like a show or like a live show, like an unpaid fun thing mm-hmm. that I just don't feel like doing.
Right.
I still go, I'll do it next month. And then I end up next month going, God damn it, I have to do all this fucking shit that I said.
There's a guilt. There's like this guilt feeling. And that guilt comes from either like letting people down or this fear of like, I've done everything and that's got me to where I am. So will I get soft? You know, like there's a bunch of stuff. I don't know what it is personally for you or why you think you feel that guilt, but I definitely can relate to it. I think because we're like workaholic.
We're both Virgos. There's mm-hmm. definitely like an element of like that mm-hmm. sort of like really wanting to do everything and be on top of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also this, which by the way, I'm not like a huge astrology person. I only know about Virgo stuff.
Yes,
I don't
me
like
too.
Know everything.
I'm with you. I only know about me and that's all I care about. And maybe that's a Virgo thing.
And that actually is in line with the Virgo traits. But like, but I think part of it for me is with saying no is like, I believe that saying yes did get me here and that it will get me to the next place. So it's, there's still this mentality that like, I need to keep showing up for all different types of things. Partly because I'm grateful for, if it's like work related, I'm grateful for a job. I'm great. I understand the value of a dollar and like care about it. So to pass on like a free job is like crazy. So a lot of times that's a factor. And I think people like disregard that a lot with actors. They kind of go like, why did that guy do that thing? And you're like, because his bills, you fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think? Yeah. It's like, yes, some of it is like you're fulfilling your passion and your heart. And like and a lot of times you get that even out of a job that's not that great.
Yeah.
But a lot of times it also is because you have to pay your bills.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what.
Also, sometimes it's a lot of this is out of your control. You can only control your performance. And even then, sometimes that's out of your control because you don't know who's editing it. You don't know, you know, what the final cut looks like. You don't know what. Studio is involved to say make this and that. I don't like the storyline, so now it feels choppy.
100%. I mean, I have definitely been involved in things over the years mm-hmm. where I watched it and I went, that's what it is. Like you like were making it and it was like this other thing in your mind.
Yeah.
And then you see it come together with all of the people who have to weigh in and all the different notes that are given to it. And then you watch it and you're like, seemed funnier when we were doing it. You know, it's like, I don't know. Like,
I totally understand. Or like, that's the cut they use. Like maybe it was the other cut. Like sometimes you know, like, damn, that was it. And then you see it and you're like that. No, you missed the thing. And it's like, audio could have been off. Like something could have happened or they just didn't think it was funny. And you go like, oh fuck. Well, then it's totally out of your control. Not to get very specific with a vision board, but just to kind of put a mm-hmm. a period on the end of this specific part of the conversation. Is there any specific thing that you had on your vision board? Like, do you keep stuff on your vision board if you don't get it?
Yes, I definitely do. And I will put things on over and over again. So there are for sure things that I've had on there every year since I started doing it, and sometimes they come and go. Like I'll achieve something, and then I'll be like, I kind of want that again, or whatever, or like I want that, but a little more specific in this direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I would put things on there as I was, you know, living in LA and moving around and stuff and be like, now I want a dishwasher, you know, just like the goal of like, how can this happen? And, you know, keeping it really specific like that, I think was always really helpful for me, but also having like just the bigger, like I would put like, you know, happy home life or something that's kind of vague, but along with like dishwasher where you're like, that one I know I can achieve at some point.
And you said sometimes you keep them out, sometimes you put them away. What determines that?
It's a matter of, first of all, I think like I've had periods in my life where I was really career focused, which I feel like is kind of just part of my nature anyway, but where I want to look at it all the time. And I feel that I was more of the belief, like I had the mindset that looking at it helped me like on the sort of manifesting level. And I think over time I've gotten more pragmatic about it. And I feel like I don't think of it as being as in the air as much as,
Hey, everybody, this is the B-Man, OBW, from the World Record Podcast, and I'm here to let you know that me and my co-host, the A-Train, a.k.a. Hershey Hellman, took over office hours live this week. We came into the studio. We made it our own. We wrecked the place. I stole one of Tim Heidecker's guitars. So check out Office Hours Live on your podcast app of your choice or at youtube.com/Office Hours Live this week and see what happens. Or go to worldrecordpodcast.com and you can watch the videos or join the Patreon, patreon.com/worldrecordpodcast. Enjoy the show.
It's showtime!
You know what I mean? Like I don't need to.
Yeah, you went from like cosmic to a little bit more practical with it. It's become like more of a practice for you. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I think it feels good at the start of the year to like make one. It's sort of like New Year's resolutions, but when you check in, like another thing I put on there in January was to learn piano, which I really kind of never thought I would do. But then during the pandemic, I got to the point where I was losing my mind enough that I did start learning. I've like stopped, but I'm going to go back to it. But like, that was something where I looked at my vision board and went, oh, I did start learning how to play the piano. Like, I did not think that was going to happen. I'd put that on there sort of as a like dream self goal.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Even going back to the, like you were saying, like you've had so many things throughout that you just can't control and people edit shit the way they want to. When I watched The Wrong Missy, I texted you, I think like 20 minutes into that fucking thing. I was like, what? Like, this is amazing. Like, it feels like that whatever you must have been doing, you must have been on some fucking roll because every shot, I felt like they used like every great clip. So you either gave them a shit ton of stuff, or they just I'm sure you did. Because man, how did you feel about that experience and like seeing that shit?
It was really exciting. That was definitely the first time in my career with that movie, with everything, where I felt like I was able to kind of go balls to the wall in the way that I really like to do and the way that I do on like a small scale with like podcasts or like
on stage.
On stage and these ways where like only a small portion of the world gets to witness my, what I think is my humor or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And gets to is the joking part of that, but you know what I'm saying? So, but like with the movie, it was really exciting because I really didn't know what to expect. And I truly auditioned for the movie because David Spade was already going to be in it. And I love David Spade. So I was like, I'll just go to the audition, even though I don't really understand how to play this character. I don't really know what to do here. I truly was like, I think I'll suck at this. Like it was one of those auditions where I was like, I don't even know how to say this. Like,
why?
I was like working on it at home and I was like, do I have to do a Southern accent to like pull this off? Like I didn't understand the character. And it wasn't, I mean, then I just kind of just did it as myself, but heightened or whatever. And then going into doing the movie, it was really, I think I came to understand that like just bringing my sensibility to it is the only way I'm going to sell this character because it's so absurd.
Yeah.
And I need to like commit 100% or it just doesn't work. And Tyler Spindell, who was the director, he had me improvise every scene 100 ways. I mean, we were doing it. So ultimately, I was thrilled with the outcome because we were able to, you know, he found really great takes of me where I felt like, oh, he picked the funniest one. Like, I really felt like that was the most opportunity I've ever had to improvise so much, to bring so much of myself and my humor. And it really boosted my confidence because I think, for example, with Holmes and Watson, I play a mute character. So in that context, I mean, my self-confidence was nowhere near what it would be in this type of context where I can say things.
Right.
I can only improvise with my face. So there was a lot of questioning myself within that of like, was that funny?
Yeah,
you know, like,
you
can't, it's hard to know.
Yeah, it's more of like a clown, right? You're more like doing clowning instead of like truly what your core improvising is.
Yeah. So like, while it was so cool to get to work with those guys, I felt like, oh, they're not getting who I am. Like, there's a lot of this is like, they'll never understand me.
Yeah.
Like, because I do feel like my humor is such an important part of my personality, but I don't always lead with it. Mm. Especially if I'm in a context of meeting new people, I don't feel that I always show that part of myself as much.
Yeah.
And so like, with this movie, I felt like, oh, David understands immediately who I am because I just got to improvise in front of him and show him what I like to do. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it opened it up so much. It made me really comfortable with him. It made me really comfortable on set. It made me feel like the whole crew understood me. Like, it's just this whole part of myself that I feel like I never get to use where I think I'm a nice person and I'm nice to everyone, but I don't know that they would ever walk away going like, she's the funniest person. And with this, I'm like, okay, if you liked that, then you get me.
Yeah.
You know,
it's so interesting. So, it shines through so much. It's so visceral. Like, I've seen you, you know, I perform with you. You're one of the best people to perform. You'll just go anywhere and have as much fun with shit as possible. You're one of I think we like those people that make us feel comfortable to do our thing. And to go really far and to know like we don't need to be the center of attention, but we can be if the ball's passed to us.
Yeah.
So to have that in a professional setting, to finally get that, was that one of the first times you really got to like go balls out? Or
yes, I can't really even think of another time except for with my character's special for Netflix, which I mean, that was all. I still would do it all differently, which is another thing about that. Like, I look back at that. And I'm like, oh, it happened that I did that 5 years ago. I think I've changed so much. I'm like, I would rewrite the whole thing. I would do
really?
It totally different.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, that's kind of weird. But I look at this time, I'm like, well, that also helped me feel confident and grow. Like, all these things are important for like, you know, building on top of each other.
So you've watched the characters back and were like, ah, I wish I could tweak that.
Yeah, I think I was happy with a lot of it, but I just can't watch it now. Like, it's like it's crossed that line where like I just can't. Like, so I think I might be surprised by finding stuff funny now, but in my head it's become something that like I just don't revisit.
Yeah.
But like with this movie, it was, I mean, I think so that's the thing. Like, I've never really had the chance to do it. And I think that the ways in which they left certain elements of it open-ended to me. I mean, of course there was a script and it's all exactly as written. Basically, I just got to have fun and add my flair with certain lines and moments and, you know, throwing stuff in. And it taught me a lot about commitment because I try to commit to every role I do. I try to bring, you know, full commitment to it. But with being a lead role, which I've rarely gotten to do, I've only had one other chance, and that was an indie movie.
The Unicorn, was great. But that's a completely different character.
Totally different. Yes. Really grounded. Mm-hmm. But like with this, I had the pressure of it being a bigger movie with a celebrity and all this stuff and like the Happy Madison guys. And so I spent, you know, every night memorizing my lines, and I felt fully prepared most days. Mm-hmm. And that was different for me. Usually I'm really on the fly, like memorizing it right before I start talking. Mm-hmm. And I think that made a huge difference for me. So there's like, so I felt free to play within stuff. And I also felt just the ease, honestly, being in that position, there's a weird amount of, there's a lot of pressure, but there's also the total leeway to fuck up where no one's going to be mad at you.
Yeah, they set up the environment for you to feel that way.
And if you come in to a show as a guest player, I mean, I always come in knowing my lines and all that stuff, but like, I don't want to mess it up because they don't know me and I'm not going to be the squeaky wheel.
Yes. You're a little tighter. You're a little tighter.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to come in. And also, I don't want to come in and act like you all want to see me improvise. It's like, they don't care.
Yeah, they got a schedule. They want fucking to get out of there.
Yes. Like, no one's like, wow us. But like with this, I had the chance to do that. And while it became like, there were points where it was exhausting, but I think when I look back, I'm so grateful that we shot it that way because it's a silly movie and you really just want it to be fun, funny, good time. It's not trying to like make some big statement. So if you aren't able to be like free and play within that, like, then like, what are you even doing? Like, it's just supposed to be a fun time. So.
Yeah. And you brought pathos to it too. You know what I mean? You brought like towards the end, you go like, nah, I'm a real person, you know, like, I'm not just this fucking insane person, which like also, yeah, I mean, it was just, I just, you know, I thought you knocked it out of the park with that one. So congrats on that.
Thanks.
Has your relationship with auditioning changed over the years? Has certain things that you felt were precious early on or that you did that you kind of no longer do? Do you have a different mindset going into auditions at all? You know, like going into the wrong Missy, you were like, I don't know.
No, I didn't know at all. And
so what do? You just make a choice. You just go for it. You do your thing.
Yeah, I think it's just like at this point, I definitely still have really bad auditions from time to time. And I was just thinking about one last night where I was like, it was for a pilot last year. And I walked in and first of all, I felt really shaky about the lines. I just felt like I didn't really have it. I hadn't really like said it out loud enough times. Mm-hmm. And then I got in there and saw someone who had kind of made me feel bad once.
A casting director or a person?
No, it was like a guy. It was like a room full of like 10 people. And it was like in a professional setting, he said something that bothered me. It was all about work related stuff. Yeah. It was just like,
bad vibes. This thing that you're walking into bad vibes.
And so I went, oh man, that guy's here. And then I'm like, I totally biffed it. And I was like, that blows. I should have. And so even last night I was thinking about this random audition from a year or two ago and thinking like, why didn't I just go, I don't feel good, I can't do this right now? Like, you know, you have the power to walk away. I think I have never taken that opportunity. I just keep going until I'm like, what a train wreck.
Yeah.
But like, I wished I would just go, you know, I'm really not feeling this right now. I have to leave. And they'll have me back. You know, like they'll always like, if you just were like, it's not the moment.
Yeah.
You know, even if you just said like, I feel sick, like whatever, you could lie.
Yes.
But like, it's just, I hate that having those bad auditions where you kind of know, you just know right when you start talking, like, I don't have it.
Oh, it is. I just went through one and I haven't had a lot of auditions since I moved out here. And it was just a random time when like Joni was either sick or she was up. It was something like that. And I had 2-3 hours of sleep in me. And I had this like really chunky dialogue audition too. And the people running the room were very warm, but it was a new place. So it was like first time I was with them. I came in hot. I came in like totally wired and I just couldn't get through. My character was like me on speed times 10 and I was fumbling through and I was improvising it out and they were like laughing, but also looking at me like, you got to go.
Yeah.
You know, like you got to, they were so sweet. They were very nice. They have kids, they understood, but I was like, I was so embarrassed.
Totally.
I don't want to feel embarrassed.
No, and that's totally what my feeling is with that audition. I'm like, I was just embarrassed that I didn't crush it in front of that guy that I thought was annoying. Like, I wish that went better.
Yeah.
And it sucks to feel that way. Yeah. Like, and it sucks to feel that lack of control. I think like as improvisers, we have this feeling that like, you can kind of just start talking and you'll figure out where you're going like halfway
through.
Because
that's how it always is.
All work out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so like with auditions, I have a bit of that mentality where I'm like, I just got to get a feel for what I'm supposed to do. And like, even if I lose track completely, I'll just make something up that makes sense and it'll pass, you know? So that's kind of good and bad. Like, I think you can totally rest on that in a way that's like negative.
Yeah.
And you are lazy,
right.
Not, you know, fully, but like, you let yourself off the hook.
But it's almost like you were saying with the wrong Missy, like you really got your lines down so that when you went in there, they were really a part of you. And yeah. I'm guessing, like you were saying, like, oh, sometimes before you didn't have all the words, and it was probably to keep you loose. I'm guessing is like you don't want to be so, you know, stiff. You want to get the intentions down, like the improvisational feel should be like you want it to feel present and connective.
And I think so much of that is knowing that they want you to do that.
Yes.
Like if there's certain jobs, they don't imply that at all. And I think with this, it was like I started to understand really right away that like that's what we were going to do.
Right.
And I remember a day where both David and I, like we did one whole scene and we were like, that was good. And then they were like, okay, next scene. And we both were like, I feel like I've never read this. We both were just like, oh, this is happening right now. And we just like crammed it. And actually it's one of my favorite scenes. So it's kind of, but I think there's this thing about like the muscle of memorization that when you're working really hard and you're being in a, you're in a position where you're being challenged in the way that you want to be, you could rise to the occasion.
Yeah.
And it like feels so good. Like I think I've had moments like that where it's not like gratifying. Like I did this commercial. Mm-hmm. I did like a really weird like web series of web commercials for some like really weird technology that I mean, like I don't even know if these commercials, like I don't know that I ever saw them, but I it was like I never say no. No, I mean, it was a really good paycheck. Uh-huh. And it was like, this was like years ago, but I was like really excited that I got this offer to do this series of commercials for a well-known company, but I don't know that I ever saw the commercial. Uh-huh. And maybe I did, I just forgot. But they were only online. And I got there and they added like all of these lines. Like it was like pages of dialogue that was all like technical jargon. I didn't know what I was talking about. It was like machines that did this certain thing and whatever. And I also had to be in a very specific situation where I was like in an elevator and it was a fake elevator and then the doors would come off and these people would come in and this thing would move and this thing would happen. And like everything had to happen like exactly the right moment. And I was under so much pressure. This was probably just like a year or two after we did our episode.
Yeah.
And the pressure was like so intense and I got through it. And I remember riding home and like crying in my car, like, oh my God, I did that. Like, yeah. I can't believe I memorized it all. Like they were looking at me and I just memorized. Like you just find that you just do it. Yeah. And that didn't feel great. I was proud of myself that I achieved it, but I was like, oh my God, like, that was like so much pressure all day long. And it was like kind of horrible.
Yeah.
And then cutting to this situation where like, it's like loose, like it, but I do have the pressure to memorize it. I have to perform the scene. I have to achieve the goal. Everyone is waiting for you, but there's this comfort and support and like it's comedy. So there's just this ease that comes with that. But I think I've definitely found over the years that like the more you, it's just like anything, the more reps you get, the more comfortable you are. And like memorizing a lot of things over the course of a couple months, you get better at memorizing.
Yeah, sure.
It's faster.
Yeah.
I mean, auditions I think are still horrible. I hate them. And I just had one in the pandemic from home, self-tape, which by the way, like self-tapes, I feel really, I don't even know what I feel because sometimes I've had success with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember early on, it was like you booked a shit ton off of self-tapes.
Yeah, it was like I had a lot of luck with them, but they also have this amount of pressure that really sucks where like you have to make like your husband or whoever lives with you or a friend record you. Yeah. You do have the opportunity to fuck up because it's not the real audition, so you want to get it right. Yes. You can't send them a video of you fucking it up. Like get it right, you know?
Yep.
I just had one and it was like 8 pages. We need this by like Monday, 2 days later. And it must be, and it has 0 views on Vimeo. I'm like, these people, it was a must have within, I worked my ass off. I put on makeup. I haven't done that in months. You know, I'm like, I'm doing my best. And then they just didn't even watch it. Yeah. I don't like.
Well, Lauren, I'll tell you something. They might have. Okay. Cause this has happened to me before. And I casually brought it up. I was like, oh, I guess they never saw that thing. My manager or agent at the time was like, oh no, we took that video and uploaded it to a separate platform.
Okay.
So I'm going to.
Okay.
So they might have.
Better.
They might have.
I hope so because I put in a lot of work and I hope it got uploaded to a server where a person watched it one time.
You'll never know.
That's all I want.
You'll never know.
But that helps me more than you could ever.
Okay.
Because the 0 views was, I was like, what is this world we live
in? Yeah, yeah, fuck you. Well, I mean, I've talked to some other friends of just the amount of effort they put in for a commercial audition is basically like film the commercial for us, And if we choose you, we'll just use that. You know what I mean? It's just there's so much like you do all the work
during
now.
This time.
Yes. During the pandemic.
Wow.
Where it's like, oh, go out and get this beer and come back and, you know, go on a golf course. And it's like, what? This is a pandemic. Things are closed. So I'm always just like, Jesus.
It's so weird.
Random segue. In Laura's episode, she had talked about very vaguely about kind of being up for a TV show, and her friend was up for it. We found out, or she found out while we were staying at that friend's place. That was your place. This was crashing.
Yes.
I didn't know it was funny from like, since it's over, it's like from your end. I don't know how you were feeling during all that.
I remember this. I don't remember extremely well how it went down, but I remember we were both up for it.
Yeah. And we were staying with you.
Yes. You were
which
staying
we often
in my house.
Did. Every time we came into LA, yes. You were very generous.
And then I stayed with you so many times.
You were very generous.
Which,
we appreciated it.
By the way,
it.
Amazing. Oh, the entire time I was on Orange is the New Black, I was like living on your couch. I mean, that's also something people don't understand about this business is like you don't immediately make money to get a hotel.
Yeah. You were that's and you were saying that that's where we recorded the first episode of this. You were staying on my couch. You were Orange is the New Black was not out yet. And we recorded this at my little dining room table in my 400 square foot fucking one bedroom.
I could probably like walk you through that apartment accurately because I spent so much time there. I'm like, I remember where every little thing was. But yeah, you were staying at my place and we were both up for it. But so then I think I got the call while you guys were there. Mm-hmm. But did I tell you right away?
No.
I'm trying. Yeah.
No, because so then like, I think Laura got like a text or email or something very at like as you were either getting that call or right at it was like very quickly.
It's such bullshit. Like that's such an uncomfortable thing to experience. I remember feeling like, oh, this is uncomfortable, but I can't remember how it played out exactly. But it really was one of those things. I mean, I think it happens so often. Where you're up for the same part, but it doesn't happen every day that you're like basically living together during it and then like getting the calls at the same time. Yeah. Like good news over here, bad news over here. Like, oh, fuck this.
You're 15 feet away from each other.
Yeah. And I'm like, cool. Like whispering like, yay.
Yeah. I think you went outside and like Laura was like looking at her phone and yeah, it was very...
It's not cool.
No, it was very... I was just like in between it, like looking both ways. I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, that's not a good feeling. But I mean, it's weird too because with as time goes on with these jobs, I've like been up against people I know for so many things and they get it and I don't get it or whatever, and like it feels like it's shitty, but the more it happens, it's just like I mean, it's just like anything that you get comfortable with rejection and you start to accept the ways this business works, but like I think I've gotten better at feeling genuinely okay with someone else getting the thing and like just going like, well, that's just how the cookie crumbles. Like it's a bad feeling because you know you're so close to it.
Yeah.
Like that you're like, it could have gone either way.
Yeah.
But that's also kind of a good feeling because you are in a place where it's possible that
you made it very
right there,
far.
You know?
Yeah, you made it to a place where not a lot of other people are. So there's like that good feeling, and then like being so close and not getting it, it's you fall off the cliff again.
Yes, because I think for me, every time I have had auditions where I don't get them, which is all like 90% of the time, I don't think about it too much and I'm like, oh, okay. Like I don't like cry, but like when I'm testing for something and it's like down to me and two other people and the pressure is so high and they make you come in five times and do it over and over and then I don't get it and I get a call that's like, you didn't get it, then I might cry because it's like you are being told directly no. And usually it's a very indirect no by way of silence. And so you're just like, I think I didn't get it. And then the show comes on, you're like, that girl got it. And now it's like, when you get super close, you're like, someone calls you and says no. Yeah. And it feels so much worse. And then you have to be like, that's actually cool. Like, you're like, oh, okay. I don't really care. And then like hang up the phone and like cry for 5 minutes and then move on. But it's a bummer.
Yeah. I think we're both good at moving on. I think you're just better at it then. Like, I think we both can move on from things. Like, we don't like look back too hard, but then I think I look for signs way too much. Like, oh, I should stop this business because I didn't do X, Y, and Z. Where you were going into this thing being like, I'm not going to do anything else. Therefore, if I don't get this thing that I really wanted, you know, I'm going to feel bad in this moment. I'm going to cry it out. And then fucking, I know that there will be something else.
Yeah. It's such a weird thing because I mean, I don't think you should ever quit because I think you're so good.
Okay. I'm never going to quit. Thank you, Lauren.
But really, and I think there are some people like I have this mentality of like, yes, you should do it. Follow your dreams. And I have said before, I did this interview, this is kind of a weird thing that I got confronted on, but I did this interview with Sam Jones, who's this guy who does these like long form interviews in black and white.
Yep.
And I really enjoyed the interview. And during it, he's very in depth mm-hmm. and because you talk for like a long time. Yep. And during it, I talked about how I think people should quit improv because not everyone's good at improv. And I mean, I had more of a point and it goes on.
Yeah.
But the point is really just that like a lot of people think improv is bad because they see a lot of bad improv because a lot of people are bad at improv.
Yes.
Now, there are people who are amazing and I could name hundreds. Mm-hmm. Like it's not like it's so few and I'm saying like only you and I are good.
Right.
There's a ton of amazing people. But that's who should be doing it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and there's people in your every class who are naturally gifted mm-hmm. or can learn mm-hmm. and are funny. Mm-hmm. And those people, you could tell in a class, you know, 3 out of 10 are actually going to be really good at this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really my point. But I understand how it can come across as like discouraging. Right. And maybe it's supposed to be. But this, I was taking this Pilates class and the teacher was like, oh, hey, I do improv. Or you know, she actually was like, I used to do improv. And then I saw your interview and you said people should quit. And I quit.
Oh, my God.
And she was actually saying it. She's like, at first I thought you were, she didn't say a bitch, but she said something like that. Like, at first I thought you were being a bitch.
Yeah.
But then I thought about it more and I thought I'd be way happier taking acting classes. And I've been taking acting classes and it's been way better for me. And it makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's good. And then the whole Pilates class, I'm like, I'm an asshole. Like, you know? but I felt like, wait, ultimately that made sense because some people are the youth, they think they're supposed to be doing this thing mm-hmm. because it's like a path you've seen before or something. And it's just not a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think if something feels wrong to you, that's so different than getting discouraged by lack of success in certain moments.
Right.
Like if you're doing something where you're like, I'm having no success and I don't know that I actually like this thing and it's not fun.
Yeah.
Like, you know, which I think a lot of people keep going, even though that those things might all be true. Like if you're doing improv because your manager told you to, but like you kind of hate it and you get embarrassed every time you do it. Like you don't have to do it. You could be a great actor and never do that. Like,
yeah.
And it doesn't mean don't follow 100%. Your dreams.
Well, yes. And I'm always like go for what you want. You might have a detour along the way and that's okay as well. You can always get back on track or you can just follow that detour, which might lead to another detour. You don't know. I think the difficult part with those things, going back to what you said with like someone telling you you didn't get the part, is like you think you did a bad job or you just weren't good enough. Right. And I think we've been doing this long enough to know like that's always not totally true. It's just hard in the moment to not take it so fucking personally because you went pure vulnerability and pure balls out with it. Right.
And you know, they were talking about you.
Yes, exactly. Length. Like, you know, they were so, like, Lauren, nah, she's not right for the part.
Go,
yeah. And you go,
she's not cute enough. It should be a short girl, you know, or whatever. Yes. Like there's like, you could see. And then that's like the nicest thing I could have said. I truly am like, I picture way worse things being said about me, but it's like, you have this feeling like, oh, they were discussing me and dissecting what I did and they decided I simply can't do the thing or it won't be as good if I do it. Yeah. And and that truly is just your, you know, self-consciousness talking. Like, it's not like, because it can be something so simple. They could literally be like, hey, we kind of owe that other actor this job because of this other thing.
Yeah.
Like whatever. There's like weird politics that you just don't know.
Yep.
So like, so much of it is like that. And I mean, so many things I've had so many auditions where I think it went really well. And then like, they just give it to someone super famous and you're like, I know they didn't audition. So like, why were we all sitting there like working our asses off when they never were going to give it to us?
Yeah, it's so funny that you go like, I think it's great for people to hear because I think you book a lot, or we see you out in the public and you're doing a lot all the time. It's good to know that, you know, 90% of the things that you're going out for, you still don't get. And you have learn how to compartmentalize that. And if you want to get gross with like, oh, the more popular you get or quote unquote famous you get, like the kind of more the stakes go up and more of that, like it feels like shit just doesn't change. It feels like it's always the same. You're going through same shit. You have the same doubts. Like you want everything.
I couldn't bear to listen to myself on the old episode. Like I hate to hear myself. Like
I'm with you.
Know, talk about
listening back. So, I was like, I want to burn everything. You're great. I don't want to. I hate myself.
No, yeah. That's exactly how I feel. Yeah. And it's like I don't want to hear it. But I was curious what I would say. But I totally think so much of it is probably exactly the same. That like, you know, I you kind of get this idea that when you reach a certain point, certain things will fall into place, or like it'll, or you'll get more things than you don't get. And I just don't think that's really true ultimately. Mm-hmm. Like, I think one thing I might guess about being at a different level is like, you just choose more often mm-hmm. what you are doing. So it's less coming at you. I mean, it's more things coming at you than you seeking things out that you're getting rejected from. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's part of it maybe. And you feel less rejection because of that. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't feel like I'm at that level. Mm-hmm. But like with where I am right now, I like audition for voiceover things mm-hmm. from home like every other day. Mm-hmm. And I get like one every 15.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and even that probably isn't even, it's probably less than that.
Yeah.
So like it's that feel, I always think like, why is this so hard?
Yeah.
Like but there are people, but the competition is fierce. Like there's people who are like incredible in every arena. And so they're going to get it and you're not going to get it. And sometimes you will.
Was there something that you like, you've really wanted that you didn't get over these couple of years? Was there one thing? I mean, you don't have to say which specific project or anything like that, but was there like a couple of these where you're like, I am perfect for this, or like, that's the thing. And like, it did come out, or it did do well, or, you know, you're just like, fuck, you know? And then how do you straighten yourself with that? Because I think that's like the ultimate head fuck, I guess.
Yeah. I've definitely had those things. Like a lot of times I feel that way about pilots and then they don't even go. Right. And I'm like, well, I guess it wasn't that good or whatever. Like, I mean, that's such there's so many hurdles to get something on TV that
it's insane.
It's insane. Yeah. So I just don't, I kind of just let a lot of those go, but there definitely have been like shows that are the TV shows that are successful that I auditioned for. And was like, I know I had a bad audition. Mm-hmm. Like, and that kind of kills me because I just think like, oh, I could have worked on that more. Mm-hmm. I could have brought more to that than I did, or I didn't see what it really was supposed to be, or, you know, sometimes when you see something done by someone else, it's interesting because you can say, oh, I didn't really get that it was supposed to be like that. And then I think, well, it wasn't supposed to be like anything. It just was that person is like that. I couldn't have ever done what they're doing. Yeah, I'm not them.
Right.
So that's also a really helpful thing for me in keeping my confidence going forward is like, I just simply can't be different than I am. Like I'm going to bring what I'm going to bring to it. And sometimes that really works. And sometimes it doesn't really work. And
I'll say this, the hypocrisy of who we are as well. I said that we are that we move on from things very quickly, but we also are very retrospective. Meaning even in the first episode, you were like, oh, after improv episodes, I'll like think back about the mistakes, or like I'll want to text people and be like, sorry about doing this. Like I'm the same exact way. I think we just like feel bad about some like not doing our best, and then we feel like we need to apologize either to ourselves or to other people for some reason about like not always doing our best. And I think the reality of this, if we're talking to ourselves and taking a step away, our therapists might say like, that's the name of the game. Like sometimes you do well, sometimes you don't. Sometimes like you just go into a room and you feel the magic. Sometimes you are present, the words are there, you feel connected, and then sometimes you walk into a room and and it's cold and you can't, and you're stuttering through your words, or you're too hyper, or you were up all night, whatever it is, and you just can't get it. And then the funny thing about everything is, like, you could book that shitty thing and you could not book the thing that you felt great about.
Totally. And that does happen. And then that throws off all of your neuroses, basically.
Yeah.
Like, you can't hold on to any of that shit because you're like, wait, I actually thought I sucked really bad at that.
Yeah.
They still saw something in that that they thought was good. And then that thing that I thought was amazing, they didn't think so.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't amazing enough, or it wasn't the right person or whatever. So it's so true. I mean, I think what you just said about the room being cold or something, like, there are so many factors that go into an audition that, like, can fuck you up when you go in feeling really good. And then, like, sometimes I'll be sitting in the waiting room and I can just, the walls are really thin and I can hear the person before me doing the entire audition. And I think, they put inflection on a word I wasn't going to put inflection. And then I'm like, am I doing it? Am I emphasizing the wrong part of that? Because I hear them doing that. And then I'm like, why am I able to hear them? And then I go in there and I've just been thinking about how they did it. And I'm like repeating that back. Yeah. And it's just, it's like, that was totally just because of the way the room was.
Yeah.
So like, you can't really get too caught up in it. I think a lot of it is not telling people, like, my mom, for example, about my auditions.
Oh, no way.
Because then they're like following up. Like, did you get it? That? Mm-hmm. It's like, well, no, you definitely would know if I got it.
I'll tell you.
My mom asked me if I've talked to Netflix lately. I was like, no, I've never talked. I don't know what that means.
You mean the person Netflix? Have you called up Netflix lately?
I talked to them and I, yeah.
Yeah. What'd you feel about with Orange is the New Black? You didn't know that your character was going to be written, but that was kind of like a shock. That was like a shock to you. I'm guessing when you're reading the season and you're like, oh, what? Like, what the fuck?
I was sitting on your couch.
Oh, yes, that's
right. Mattress.
That's right.
I got the script.
Oh, my God.
For the,
yes.
And I was scrolling through it and I'm looking at my lines and it said, like, you're fired. And I was like, oh, let's keep scrolling. Something else. Yeah. And then they'll go, just kidding. And it just, and I truly sat there and was like, my character just got fired. Like, I'm off the show. Like, it was truly like, I sat there and just had like kind of the Joey from Friends moment where, like, he's being killed on the soap opera and he keeps trying not to, like, fall in the elevator shaft or whatever.
Yeah.
He's like, he's just like, oh, I don't want to die.
Yep.
Like, and I was like, I don't want to be killed off the show.
Yeah.
So I really, it was really surprising. And I mean, of course, they write things for a trillion reasons. I didn't feel like it was personal, but it's still that thing of like, oh, man, I was having fun. I didn't. And no one like told me.
Yeah.
I had to find out like reading it, which maybe that's how it always goes for actors when they're like killed off of something.
Sure.
I don't know. But
yeah.
But
they brought you back. I mean,
experience.
You came back at a certain point, though. But yeah.
Yeah. I got to come back in season 7 and have like a moment of sort of
closure,
you know. Getting a little bit of closure with the characters. And that was really cool. It was really fun to go back. It was like I think I immediately fell back into the mindset of myself in 2013. Like, it was weird. Like, being right back in a set that you haven't been on in 7 years.
It's like going back to your high school or something and having to like take class again.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. It was truly like because a lot of the same people were there and everyone's super nice. It was nothing about anyone else. It's all like in my own head. But I was like, oh, I could feel almost like my lack of confidence that I had at that time.
Yeah.
Like, just returning to this exact scenario and feeling myself just be here. And like, and because you also have all these dynamics that you are returning to. I mean, I've just never had that experience. So, you know, at the time, that was one of my first big jobs. And so it was like, I was just soaking everything in. I was kind of talking to people here and there, but kind of shy.
Yeah.
And then I don't feel that way on sets now. I mean, even if I don't talk to people, I don't feel uncomfortable usually.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm fine being alone.
Right.
But I had this, like, I remember when I did Orange is the New Black, I would tell you, if anyone asked me at that time, like, what my least favorite part about being an actor was, I would say lunchtime. Because I felt so paranoid about where to sit and who to talk to. And I don't even think about that now.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's kind of funny. Like, I truly, I can see how I've grown in that time.
Yeah.
But like, at the time, that was like stressful.
Yeah. You don't exactly know like who. Yeah. That's a whole other thing where it's like, is this the cool kids table? Like,
yeah,
I sit far away from the director.
Right?
Yeah. Do you want me to sit here?
Yeah. And you find out nobody cares about anything. Yeah. Everyone just wants to eat and chat or not. And like, yeah, it doesn't matter. But
yeah,
but there's just that I was more nervous at the time.
Yeah. I mean, it was cool to going to that set was very, very cool. I had no idea that the lunchroom was a set. Like the actual prison lunchroom, I was like,
yeah,
the you know, production designers, like that, they fucking blew that whole thing out of the wall. It was so cool to just kind of like go through everything and be like, wait, this is a set? Like, blew my mind.
Yeah,
blew
my mind. I know. I always love that about working on something you've already seen, because you get to go, oh, this is how the house is. Yes. Like, I was on Good Girls this last mm-hmm. season, and the whole house is. The house that I was working in, I don't know how it is for every single thing, but was all a set on a stage. Yeah. And I was like, it's beautiful. It's yeah. like this full house that they've created with like tchotchkes and all this stuff. Yeah. And like on the show, it looks like a real house. I would have thought it was a real house. Yeah. So I just think that's so cool.
Yeah. Was the most frightened you've ever been in these last couple of years being on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Because that was...
yes.
I wasn't even going to bring this so... up, but I was just like, just remembering like that, like, my mom kept being like, did you watch it? I was like, no, we saved it.
Oh, and, my God. I was so nervous. And then I finally watched
it. And you had told Laura what happened, but I had no idea. So I was like in real time being like, what the fuck? Like just going crazy.
It was the most insane thing ever. And
oh, no, I'm sorry. My mom ruined it for me. I forgot about that. She did ruin did it she? For me. Yes, yes.
She goes, she like told you She's how much like, I wanted.
500 that. I was like, what? No. I told her multiple times.
That's so
yeah.
funny.
Yeah,
it was amazing. I loved getting to do that. And that truly was one of the most fun, but also most nerve-wracking experiences ever. And I was so happy I got to have my dad as my fellow friend.
That was like one of the best moments. That was truly.
It was like such good TV. Oh, like I'm just like, perfect. He changed his mind midway and then he didn't answer when they called him back. I was like, this is yeah. classic. This is like great. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, man? But that was truly wild. I mean, truly, I was thinking about when we did this podcast before
yeah.
and my life is just in every way, like so different from that. And it's just so crazy. Like how much happens in that amount of
yeah,
time.
Yeah. That 7 years was, I mean, you've done everything from like indie movies to The Big Bang Theory. Like, and then yeah. you've probably recorded almost 1,000 podcast episodes.
Oh my God. Yeah,
you've done. Sure. I counted 40 different podcasts in that time.
Oh my God!
So, and in each of some of those are yours, which you've done, you know, over 100 or so podcasts. Yeah. So it's like, is that like your? I was thinking, I was like, oh, some stand-ups like need to be on the road, kind of doing their thing. It feels like that is your kind of shoot around basketball. Like you, there's a part of you that like needs to kind of get on, be silly. Like that's your catharsis in a way?
I think so. And it's funny because I guess at that time that we had that conversation, I hadn't done any, maybe. You might have been one of the first podcasts. I think I had done maybe like one episode of like Improv for Humans
Yes. Yeah.
But like I hadn't really, or maybe a Comedy Bang Bang, but I hadn't really done
You haven't done, you didn't do any of yours at that point, like with special guests or
no.
anything like that. Yeah.
And so looking at that it's so interesting to me that I got into that whole world because it really helped me find my voice. And yeah. I wonder if you feel the same way with, mm-hmm. with doing your show, because as an improviser, you never speak as yourself. I mean, you're always doing a character or a scene that's, you know, fake mm-hmm. and whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's how we're comedians. We're performing improvised scenes.
Right.
It's not me.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, you are never able to like, I mean, it's really, I think, hard to figure out exactly what your perspective is
mm-hmm.
besides analyzing your improv and what comes out in that.
Yeah.
But like doing podcasts as yourself, having conversations is so valuable because you're able to formulate your point of view. And
yeah.
I think I've gotten to know myself so much from doing podcasts. I feel confident about my humor and confident to say like I'm a comedian, mm-hmm. not just I'm an improviser or not just I'm an actor or whatever. It's like my comedy comes through these podcasts, whether I'm having a serious conversation or not.
Right.
It's still my point of view and myself.
Right.
And I never expected it to lead to like that kind of discovery of like and that feeling of confidence that comes from doing your own thing.
Yeah, because I don't know if I found my voice through doing this, but there is something about just doing a project, like doing your project, like taking the responsibility, I guess, and being like, and putting your name on something.
Yes. When I think about you, though, I think like you, your improv is often, your character's often close to yourself, mm-hmm. but you go big. Mm-hmm. So like you play really hard, but I think that when you're that type of player, you naturally know your voice a little more. Like it wasn't until I came to UCB that I started even not speaking in a character voice for every single scene. I had never done it. And I didn't understand what everyone was doing. And then they'd like call me Lauren in the scene. And I'm like, oh no. Like it's like it was like kind of a lot for me.
Yeah.
And I remember I had been talking to this manager who didn't sign me or anything, but she was like giving me advice at the time. And she was like, you could be like Phoebe on Friends, but you have to use your own voice. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I never even thought I could be like Phoebe on Friends. Mm-hmm. I had never seen it like that. Like, yeah. Oh, if I talked as myself, it's like hireable.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. You know? Yeah.
I was like, oh, I can't play an old woman on like Friends. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like,
yeah. Right.
Not that Friends was on when I was doing shit.
But we could play, you know what I mean? Caricatures really well, I think. Like yeah. we can have a lot of fun with our caricatures. And I think it's creating a little bit more of a three-dimensional character. I always broke it. I always told my students, I was like, with UCB, like the difference, I don't know if this analogy makes sense, but I used it a lot, was like, I grew up loving like Merry Melodies and Bugs Bunny. And that's two-dimensional, literally yeah. two-dimensional cartoons. I think UCB or the type of humor that we're going for is more like Pixar, which is like actual depth to those characters. They're literally as yeah. well, like there is some depth, and like the silly moments are a little bit more grounded in not necessarily a story, but are a little bit more grounded as individuals, even if they're fucking fish or you know
right
different things.
There's like emotional stakes.
Yeah, so it's kind of bridging the caricature with kind of, you know, you could still be a cartoon, you can still play big, but it how do you ground it in some sort of truth? And that took a while. And I think that's really fun to justify stuff and get really in a conundrum about. I love the situations where it's like, no way can you justify this. Like, there's yeah. no way this even makes sense at this point. And then finding a way to ground the yes. scene is very funny.
But don't you love when, even though you've been doing this for a million years, you still can't figure out a way to ground it, and it's horrible?
It's the worst. I mean, you feel like you're like, oh yeah, I'm not good at this.
I have had that happen in recent history. I've had it happen very recently where I did a whole thing and I'm like, that never found its footing. Like that was like literally bananas and not even funny. Like it's like, it's so crazy. It's not funny.
Yeah.
That's the worst. Like, I don't even know how to bring this back to earth. Like, yeah. Oh my God.
For some reason you saying that reminded me of our episode of, with special guests when I was like, I was like a garbage man or something like that.
Yeah.
But you had been,
oh my God, yours was so funny.
That was fun. But I remember the part, I just was losing it, was because I was a garbage man in my head in New York and you were a garbage man in LA. So your garbage truck that was, now that I live in LA, I understand like there's a little machine that comes out and picks up the garbage and puts it in the back.
Yeah.
Whereas in New York, these guys are riding on the back. And there was this beautiful moment of us having to justify connecting like our who we actually are in like the middle of the episode. In the middle of the episode, I was like, yeah, but sometimes we ride on top or something like that. I just remembered doing that. That was a very fun, because we were talking about justification.
So do they still do that in New York? Because I was just still saying riding this the about back. How these garbage trucks, like it's chaos. My garbage trucks here, like they go down the street like 8 times.
Yeah.
They're like, we'll go once for the recycling and we'll come back an hour later for the regular. I'm like, can you just do it all at once? I don't understand what's happening. But I remembered growing up, there was a guy who would go out and lift it. I'm like, this does seem much easier now that
yeah.
this whole.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's.
But, so New York is maybe
New York, the New York suburbs, all that stuff. Yeah, there's still guys. Yeah, there's still guys that are doing it.
That's
especially
cool.
in Jersey where I am now. So I'm still yeah. seeing them. Well, I want to thank you publicly for also, it didn't work out, but you had reached out to me and were like, I'm trying to produce some stuff. And we tried to produce The Need to Fail and send it to some places. It never panned out, but it was very nice of you to do that. So thank you
for, my God, of course,
for doing that.
But you did figure it all out, and it's like
somewhat.
I mean, truly, it's crazy though. Like with something like that, I thought this is a no brainer. Obviously, it should get on a network.
Yeah.
All this stuff.
Yeah.
People are crazy, man. I just pitched something in the pandemic to 7 places and got rejected 7 times.
Mm.
And it just makes you go, what the fuck does anyone want me to say? I don't know. What do you expect me to say? Because I clearly didn't deliver whatever you thought it was. Just, there's no predicting this stuff.
Well, thanks for doing this. This was it was cool to kind of have a conclusion to this all. And
well, congratulations. I mean, you really, I would consider this a huge success. How many episodes is it?
This will there's going to be total probably 156 or so.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, did you ever think it would be like you'd get that in depth with it?
Nope.
Yeah, that's so cool.
No way. Yeah, it was
and I've listened to so many of them and it's so good.
Thanks.
And I just love hearing people talk about their failures because it really humanizes everyone. And it is that thing where like with this horrible business where it just helps to hear that someone mm-hmm. you admire or think is cool or funny, like also struggles. Like it's such a simple idea, but people are so afraid to talk about failure. And I just think it's so bold that you did this. So good job.
Thanks. No, I appreciate that. And I think it's cool to listen to other people like say authors or musicians and stuff like that to be like, oh yeah, anybody that's putting themselves out there and is vulnerable is kind of going through this, like, I'm putting my heart on my sleeve. That's why it's like, that's why we need to protect ourselves a lot. I think we're both people that like will open up as much as possible, but always maybe keep a part of ourselves hidden in a way because it's like, well, that's for me. That's not for you.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like this is, and I don't know if that's like held me back in a way, but there's something precious about like not revealing it all out there, but revealing like 99% of it. You know what I mean?
I think you reveal a lot that makes you really three-dimensional.
Yeah.
I think there are some people who like celebrities where they're so secretive about their life that you're like, hey man, I bet it's not that interesting. Like just give me something. Like you know, like just tell us who you're married to or whatever. Like people are so weird. You're like, just it's not that serious, but like,
I think
there's, you can keep some things for yourself and it's nice. It's nice for me that I don't even know what those things are for you. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, that's cool. Like, it just means you've done a good job protecting yourself and still being vulnerable and sharing. And I mean, I think it's been so cool hearing you talk about becoming a dad on this show and like all of those types of things. It's just so interesting. I mean, so much has changed for you in the amount of time that's passed that like, it's just wild.
Yeah.
Like you've moved across the country, got married, had a baby, like all this career stuff, ups and downs, all that shit.
Yep.
Like that's amazing.
Yeah. I've tried to numb myself out at times, but I'd rather choose feeling it all, I think.
I think so too. I think like when you now have this record of like your years as well as all these amazing conversations, but just like, I mean, do you ever think about, I mean, I know you're trying to wrap it up and I'm keeping it going.
No. It's okay.
Do you ever think about Joni eventually listening to this, like, and hearing your thoughts on stuff or like,
you know, I haven't thought about that, but I have thought about like, sometimes she like peeps in the background and I'm like, oh, that's her voice. And if I do listen back, it's cool to kind of capture, just like her voice at a time when I didn't, you know, we weren't videotaping her or something like that.
Yeah.
Like she's just a reminder that she's there and hearing her little peep is special to think about. But no, I haven't thought about her listening back to this and thinking about it now. It makes me a little emotional. It makes me proud. I think it makes me proud that she'll hear some of this stuff. So yeah, thanks for asking.
Cool.
I haven't thought about that.
Yeah. It's really cool. I think like to be able to have that with your parents is so unique and rare that you would be able to hear them kind of, you know, as she gets older and understands what you do more, to be able to hear you talk about it in depth and like the highs and lows of it in a way that you might not typically tell her
or remember, you know what I mean? You were such a different person in 2013.
Yes.
Myself as well. So it's like, we were such different people. So our thought processes are different. Our experiences are different. Our traumas are different. Everything mm-hmm. is different. And the more you kind of go through it, the more, you know, it's a perspective shift. So to kind of hear, it's almost like a time capsule, right? Like you're hearing yeah. the truth of what was actually happening. Fuck, I can listen to something from a couple episodes ago and be like, what? You know, like, same I don't remember. I don't even remember that. Like my memory's so bad. I just because I try to move forward with things. And it's not like we don't feel
them.
Me too.
That's a good way of putting it, because I always say I have a bad memory, and Mike, my husband, is always like, that's not like an excuse, like yeah. just try. But I'm like, I think it is that I try to move forward and not stay too weighed down by everything, even the plot of a movie that yeah. I don't remember. Yeah. Like I'm just like, I saw it, let's go yeah. like there is this feeling, and I think that with podcasts, like it's part of my, like, one thing that's kind of insane about having done so many podcasts is that there's just all these hours of me just talking about fucking bullshit. And I'm like, I don't know if my future children will ever hear it, but the idea of them listening to me like talk about taking a dump as like a character is like really weird, but I guess that's cool.
I think so.
I don't know.
I think so. I mean, listen, there could be much shittier things to listen to. Like,
yeah,
we could be Rush Limbaugh or something. I don't know.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Like, I'd rather my kid hear me talking about like shits and than being angry at a certain types of people or being self-righteous in any way and or anything yeah. like that. So I think, you know, yeah, it's very interesting to think about. It's very interesting to yeah. think about. But hey, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having
of
me.
Of course. That was Lauren Lapkus. Thank you, Lauren, for doing this. The Wrong Missy is on Netflix right now. Go watch it. Check out Lauren's podcast, her short film, all sorts of other goodies on her Patreon right now. She's on Twitter at Lauren Lapkus. I'm on Twitter at Don Finelli or at The Need to Fail. Questions, concerns, failure stories of your own, email me, theneedtofail@gmail.com. All things Need to Fail merch, you know, my one design. Head over to TeePublic, search The Need to Fail or Mahalo Your Dreams, or check out my social medias for the link. Got a sale going on right now, so go get some Faily Fail gear and get some for the kiddies, why don't ya? And why not rate and review the show on iTunes and Stitcher and tell your Faily friends to do so as well? It's never too late. That's it for me here. Got my final failures coming at you next week. Thanks for listening. My name's Don Finelli. Mahalo your dreams.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.